Support comes from Pacific Science Center, working to inspire the next generation of scientists and increase access to STEM education statewide through digital discovery workshops, science on wheels, and summer camps. More ways to support these efforts at pacsci.org.
Hey, good morning. It's Paige Browning. It's Friday. This is Seattle Now. This week, some well-loved Seattle businesses are coming back from the dead as co-ops or collectives. Residents of the town of Carnation came to Seattle to say they're fed up with false alarms at the Seattle-run Tolt River Dam. And you've heard of the Seattle Freeze, but are you Seattle smug? KUOW's Director of Community Engagement, Zeki Hamid, and Seattle Now producer Claire McGrain are here to break down the week. But first, let's get you caught up. A mural's being dedicated today at Capitol Hill's Temple to Her Sinai, a year after the temple was vandalized with anti-Semitic graffiti. Student artists from Wing Luke Museum, Seattle Academy of Arts and Sciences, and the Bush School created the mural in response to the vandalism. Temple to Her Sinai is one of the largest Reform synagogues in the Pacific Northwest. It's Earth Day on Monday, but it's never too early to start helping our planet. You can help clean up the area around the Duwamish River at Herring's House Park on Saturday morning at an event that includes a special welcome from the Duwamish tribe. You can also clean up the area around Brune Edoon the Troll at Lincoln Park in West Seattle on Saturday. We'll include an events calendar in the show notes if you're interested in finding something near you. And Seattle's got some pretty big sporting events coming up in the next few years, and the Seattle Sports Commission is trying to get region ready. They're preparing for some March Madness college basketball in 2025, and of course, the World Cup coming to town in 2026. The commission is meeting to make plans on Monday, with input from local businesses, government agencies like Sound Transit, and of course, Seattle's sports teams. That's it for now. Make sure to come back tonight for Evening Headlines. It's Friday again. Hope your weekend starts soon. We have a KUOW power panel today. Zeki Hamid is here. He's the Director of Community Engagement at KUOW. How's it going, Zeki?
Oh, it's going pretty good.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
And Claire McGrain is here. She is a producer on this show, Seattle Now. Claire, how are you?
I'm well. I really enjoyed the sun on my way into the station today.
Ah, so lovely. Same. All right, before we dive in, you already know about the Seattle Freeze, a reputation we have, rightly or wrongly. Well, here's a new one, the Seattle Smug. This is what Axios Seattle has named a social phenomenon its reporters say they see in Seattle. They provided some examples of Seattle Smug. Judging someone for separating recyclables the wrong way? Anyone familiar? Ordering a latte with cow's milk, not an alternative milk? Or a smug face someone may make when they learn you're not Seattle born and bred. Maybe you're even from a suburb, okay?
Ooh, God forbid.
I know. So this is hard to describe, but Axios is claiming that this smugness exists here. Have either of you been subject to this? Claire, I see you. You look like you have examples in mind.
Well, I feel like the way I experience this is outdoorsy stuff, because I'm a casual hiker. I'm a casual, I would say, climber, rock climber. And anytime I get into a conversation with someone who's really intense about those hobbies, I feel like I've just walked into a talent show that I didn't know that I was auditioning for. Like, suddenly, they're like, oh, have you been to this? And I'm just like,
name
whoa,
this trail.
Whoa, whoa,
oh,
whoa, whoa, whoa.
What route? What climbing route?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I do this many reps, and I'm like, I'm here for fun.
Fair enough. Zeki, have you seen this?
Oh, yeah. The air of smugness just wafts everywhere around
And you've lived in other cities.
Just the fact, Paige, that you called it cow's milk, you had to make that difference. Differentiation
yes.
tells you quite a bit about
that's
about
it.
The city.
Milk is not milk anymore, Zeki. But you know, do we have a smug problem as a city? This idea of Seattle smug is the brainchild of Megan Burbank and Christine Claridge at Axios, and they brought in their own examples. Megan says she grew up in Seattle, so she's got that, but often looked down her nose at the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Christine recalled a moment where she was smoking a cigarette outside, only for people to walk by and exaggeratedly cough and wave their hands You know, how could you be doing that here in our clean air? Well, what are you smug about? Because I probably am guilty of having a long list of things, mostly related to environment stuff.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who has a lot of rage in a car. I'm always, the word that always comes out of my mouth is move, let's go.
Are you kind of one of the Seattle drivers?
Yes, that's it. That's it.
That's you.
That's me. You know, always complaining about how slow people are.
I'm smug about just like knowing stuff about the city. Like someone says the wrong city council member when they're talking about
okay.
And
this
I'm like,
this is
well,
a deep
actually.
Level of city knowledge smug.
And I do it for my job. So I feel like I've put the work in.
Fair. I probably am my own unique version of Seattle Storm smug. Anytime someone complains about us not having a basketball team, the blood starts boiling.
Yeah. I don't think that's smug. I think that's well-earned.
Thank you. Well-earned.
Don't ever change, Paige.
All right, you two. The big story of the week. This is a story about rising from the dead, coming back to life. A couple of well-known Seattle-area businesses closed for good in the past few months. Connor Byrne Pub in Ballard and Woodinville Garden Store Mulbacks. But forget those final sale, we're closed messages, because both are reopening under new names. The Connor Byrne Co-op and the Green Phoenix Collaborative at Mulbacks. Both are coming back as community-oriented, community-funded organizations. Connor Byrne has already fundraised $40,000 through an outpouring of support, and they've signed up more than 140 members. That music venue is going to open later this year. As for Mulbacks, they're taking the space they already had and repurposing it for events, classes, pop-up garden sales, art, and other garden-related activities. They asked the community to bring them back, and it's working. What does that say about the Seattle area?
I think it really just points to how hard it is to run a small business around here, right? Like, these places are culturally important, beloved kind of community icons,
right.
And yet they couldn't stay open for one reason or another. So I think it makes total sense in these individual cases to move to kind of a co-op model. But it just makes me wonder, like, what is going on? Why is the math not adding up here? Mm-hmm. And does it have to do with cost of living? Does it have to do with, you know, I know in Mulbach's case, there was an issue with the landlord. It just seems like this points to a bigger issue that is a lot of small businesses in the city are probably facing. Mm.
Yeah, I take it there's two things I think about. One, I think about the desire to be with each other. I don't know if that desire is rising right now. And there's, you know, wanting us to move away from our screens and being that there is a loneliness epidemic in the entire country, if not
That's
the world.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a desire to just be with each other there, which is forcing these other models to reemerge, so to speak. So that might be it, but I think you're dead on, Claire. I mean, it is very expensive to live in the city. Rents are so high, and it's just really hard to keep a business open.
Even one that's beloved.
Even the one that's beloved. My favorite place ever was Naked City Brewery, which was on 85th and Greenwood. Remember that place?
Yes.
I loved that
place. We used to have events there.
That's right.
KUOW did.
That's right. I produced a couple of them there, you know, and... So with that closed, even though it was popular and beloved, and I remember because I was friends with the owners, and one of the owners told me, he was like, man, owning a business is like a scam sometimes. That's what it feels like. It's so hard to keep it open.
Well, and as someone who doesn't own a business, just reading these stories, and I also think about McPherson's Produce in Beacon Hill,
right?
Wayward Vegan Cafe in Roosevelt. Those are also businesses that closed and then were kind of resurrected. In those cases, it was by an employee who worked there figuring out how to take it over. But the way that I've heard these folks talk about a small business, it's like they're sacrificing their whole life. It's like such a big deal. And one of the people who works at Connor Byrne said they consider doing this. They consider trying to step up and become the sole owner, and it's just not feasible. So the community trust kind of model seems like it works well to take the place of that huge sacrifice someone would need to make. But I wonder how sustainable that is long term, right?
And both Mulbacks and Connor Byrne Pub had pretty public struggles with staying open. It wasn't a secret. And they have now been given new life thanks to some creativity from the people who work there. but plenty of businesses in Seattle do just shut down, like mm-hmm. you're talking about Naked City Brewing. Is this a question of us needing to do a better job of showing love to our favorite places before they're our old favorite places?
It probably won't hurt, obviously. You know, show love, go, and support. But it's bigger than that. It's a systemic issue.
If for some it feels like a scam.
Right, exactly. It's just so hard to keep something open, especially a restaurant.
Yeah, and it really makes me wonder, like, some of the folks that I know who work at very small businesses, a big issue for them is making sure they can afford health care for people.
Yeah.
You know, like, social supports like that are really important, right? Like, that's one reason you might not want to make the big sacrifice and open a business is because you don't have any safety net to fall back on, necessarily.
Right. Yeah. And the prices, too. I mean, just for the average person who wants to go somewhere, it's so expensive to eat out. It's so expensive to go to a nursery and buy plants or whatever that you want to do.
Yeah.
It's become so expensive. So even though you might have the best of intentions of supporting these neighborhood places, sometimes the allure of something cheaper might come and you're like, hey, that's the only thing I can afford, so I can't even do that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it hard to go to even your favorite, restaurant, bar, music venue more than once a month or something because of the cost. But I have to ask before we move on, if you could revive one of your favorite spots, okay, we're going to make it a co-op or a collaborative, what would it be?
I would pick the Noble Fir, which was this great beer place in Ballard. And it was so cozy. Like, it really felt like a third place to me. And again, I didn't go there a ton when I lived in Ballard. But it was kind of the special outing that my fiancé and I would do for a birthday or an anniversary or something. And there are plenty of great, like, beer places in Seattle, bottle shops and things like that, where you can get unique beers. But this felt like it was such a wonderful space to be in. And a lot of the other bottle shops are, like, squeezed into the tiniest footprint they can manage, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. The Noble Fir, if you're listening.
Yeah. Naked Zaki? City, for
Naked
sure.
City
Naked
Brewing.
Naked City. That was such a great community place.
It was. Huge patio.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
That place was
a lot of
awesome.
Cool events. It felt like Cheers walking in there.
What does it say about us that we're both picking beer-focused businesses?
We are smug Seattleites that like our beer.
There you go.
Only the heaviest IPA for me.
Exactly.
Claire wants the double IPA with fresh hops. Can that be a thing?
I love fresh hops.
I
for
do
me,
too.
Real.
I do too.
Not a big IPA person, but the fresh hops are so good.
We've got a few months until then. Okay, moving on. Nobody likes a false alarm. So residents of the town of Carnation, Washington, headed west this week to bring their grievances to Seattle City Hall. Carnation is right next to the Tolt River Dam. And guess who operates that? The city of Seattle. And SPU accidentally sounded the emergency alarm on March 27th, making Carnation residents think that the Tolt Dam had failed, which would be catastrophic for their entire town. And that is the eighth accidental emergency alarm in 4 years. So they came to Seattle this week, and the people of Carnation say they want some answers. Some of them are saying that they have PTSD from the alarms. Again, this could be catastrophic for them. What questions would you be asking if you were Carnation's residents?
What the hell? I mean, eight false alarms, that's seven false alarms too many. You get one and you're like, okay, there was a mistake, something like that. But eight times over the past 4 years, they have every right to be livid at this. There's a certain level of incompetence that is just inexcusable here. Like, yeah, you are giving people PTSD, or worse, you could give people an excuse not to react when it's real.
Right. It's that crying wolf thing.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would want to know what the heck happened, right? Like, the city of Seattle has said this was a human error, essentially, that an employee of a contractor made. Like, they did something wrong when they were in the system. And I want to know, okay, what conditions was that employee working under? Because I know when I start making mistakes, it's because I am exhausted. Like, I'm really tired. I'm at the end of a really long day. I'm overworked. I want to know what this contractor is like. I feel like we just need answers on how this could possibly happen once, never mind, eight times.
Eight times.
And I think that people forget a lot of the time that, the human element of our systems is what makes it run effectively, but it's also a place where things can start breaking down. And I think we're really seeing that with all the reporting that's happening about Boeing's manufacturing issues, mm-hmm. right? Like, people mm-hmm. aren't just cogs in a machine doing a thing. And I want to know what was going on with that employee.
Yeah. And this is a major dam operation and a major issue if the alarm goes off that just continues to happen for them. And Carnation residents are basically saying, we are bearing all the risk on Seattle's behalf for no reward. The Tolt River Dam holds up to 40% of Seattle's drinking water. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. our water we're talking about. And some residents in Carnation say they're planning legal action and want the reservoir to be drained. Are they justified here?
I don't think so. I mean, you're talking about 40% of water for 700 plus thousand people.
They say 1.6 million people.
1.6
yeah.
million for, like, so around King County. So, yeah, no. Just shutting it off is the answer. You don't restrict water from so many people mm-hmm. For that. So I don't think so, but there needs to be some kind of solution because I understand it. I understand. I've lived in small towns, too. So there's that, you know, you think, okay, here's the big town that comes here, imposes things on us, and mm-hmm. it's not fair. And it's not fair that we are paying for, you know, for you, basically, and for your safety. And but I don't know what the solution is, but cutting off 40% of water is not it.
Well, and the reality is, if this reservoir was drained, that water would just have to be stored somewhere else, probably near a different town who might have the same problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the way that our cities, and I don't just mean Seattle, but I mean like the greater Seattle area, the way that our metro areas are structured, they rely on all this infrastructure that the people who live in the metro areas largely don't have to see or deal with, like agriculture and gas lines and dams and like... The reality is all of that infrastructure exists somewhere and has an impact on the people who live nearby it. And I think the key to making that system work fairly is making sure the communities who are dealing with the impacts are heard. So I think that's one of the solutions, right? Like, listen to what these folks are saying and solve the problem, which is these false alarms, not necessarily the existence of the dam.
Mm-hmm. I think there could be some lessons to be learned here about when Washington expands solar and wind power, because all those panels are not going to be in Seattle. Some will, but they're going to have to be in central and rural Washington. Well, SPU says the alarm system is actually shut off for the time being, and they will inform Carnation and other nearby towns using other means in case there is an actual emergency. Between this and the statewide emergency drought declaration this week, it's a wake-up call for Washington and its water storage systems. The Washington State Department of Ecology says statewide water supply is less than 75% of normal right now. So Seattle's going to need to be thinking about its relationship with water.
Yeah, that's really scary. And when you think about it, because it's not an anomaly. This is happening year after year. We're seeing a pattern where the snowpack is not as strong as it used to be. Mm-hmm. And it's really clear that we can't be relying on snowpack in the upcoming years. So I know the state is thinking about this. I know they're looking at building bigger reservoirs. That's going to take, you know, dozens of years until we get there. But I'm glad that the state is thinking about that. But yeah, we have to change our relationship to water, not just how we get it, but how we use it as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm guilty of that because you know, I'm a
lawn. How's your lawn looking, Zeki?
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Zeki, do you need rain barrels?
I think I need some protection from the listeners after they listen to this episode. No, I'm actively looking at alternatives to lawns because I don't want to use water for that anymore.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, we see a lot of California cities, counties, and broadly the state restrict water usage and start requiring native plants and native yards.
Right.
But we do have to move on. So one last thing before we go. This is the end for foam coolers and takeout containers, thanks to laws taking effect this summer in Washington. The law prohibits the sale of coffee cups, plates, trays, and other food and drink carriers made from polystyrene. You may know it from the brand Styrofoam. The law was signed in 2021 and is finally kicking in now. One part is already in effect, a ban on the sale and distribution of foam packing peanuts. Are you surprised to know places in Washington are still using styrofoam takeout containers? It's been banned in Seattle for a while.
I got teriyaki the other day from a local place, which shall remain unnamed,
okay,
in Seattle. And it came in a styrofoam container.
I know.
And I was like,
which
panicked.
Is actually prohibited, but
yes.
You still do find it.
But then I was like, oh no, do I put it in the trash? Do I clean it out? I was just like, my Seattle smug got me because I like needed to figure out what receptacle to use.
Yeah.
What did you end up doing?
I just threw it away. Yeah. You can't win them all.
Yeah. Could be something that takes getting used to. I remember some Seattleites blistering a little when the city switched from plastic to paper straws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the soggy
yeah.
straw.
Yeah, those straws suck.
But they decompose, Zeki. Mm-hmm. There's my smug
yeah.
coming in.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of places are already opting for cardboard, paper, fiber, foil, or rigid plastic containers. But here's my question. We're a judgment-free zone here. What do you think is your biggest waste-producing activity?
Ooh.
Maybe you're like a boba drinker, a food delivery regular, big online shopper. For me, I try hard in this area, but I think being a pet owner, you know, I throw away a lot of plastic poop bags and other pet stuff.
I have to say, I've tried recently to get better about not having a ton of waste. Like, we moved our cats onto this different litter system where you can flush stuff down the toilet. That's
okay.
working well.
Great.
But it's definitely for me eating out or getting mm-hmm. leftovers because, mm-hmm. you know, they will come in one of those containers that's like the hard shell reusable plastic that you can, like, in theory, recycle. But, like, that curry residue is never coming off.
Right.
It is in
yeah.
there.
Right.
It's stained,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So I put the stuff in the recycling. When it's compostable, I feel good about that. But I do worry that that's not actually effective, you know?
Yeah, like 9% of plastics worldwide actually get recycled.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't believe that plastics get recycled. I'm just so cynical about that. I think the thing that I produce, the waste that I produce the most is every morning, I have the same exact breakfast every single morning, which is some Greek yogurt mm-hmm. with some blueberries. But I get
sounds delicious.
But I get the individual cups
mm-hmm.
because it's the perfect amount.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Zach,
Claire's face.
I know. Do you see that?
We're doing our admissions.
I know.
I hope those blueberries are organic.
We're coming clean.
They are, actually.
Okay, there you go.
So there's that.
So how is the calculus working out on this? Can we say Zeki's a good person now?
Yes.
I know.
Zeki's coming out.
Stuff.
Yeah, he's coming out on the good side after all of
Am
this.
Am I?
Unfortunately, we got to leave it there. Zeki Hameed is KUOW's Director of Community Engagement, and Claire McGrain is a producer on Seattle Now. Thanks again, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paige.
Thanks for listening to Seattle Now, and extra thanks to the generous listeners who support this show. Today's episode was produced by Vaughn Jones, whose favorite Seattle brunch spot, Julia's, recently came back from the dead. It was edited by Caroline Chamberlain Gomez. Our production team also includes Claire McGrain, Andy Hurst, and Patricia Murphy. Greg Kramer does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR network. I'm Paige Browning. Have a great weekend.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.